As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm John McKenzie, but I'm not joined, as always, by my good friend and producer, Mike Zimmerman, because my good friend and producer, Mike Zimmerman, is feeling a little bit under the weather today. But that doesn't mean to say that you shouldn't enjoy what we have in store for you, because this week we have an incredible guest for you to get your ears around. Rulani Mokoena is the manager of Mamelodi Sundowns, who currently find themselves top of the DStv Premiership, the top division of South African football. He was good enough to join us a few days before his team competed in the MTN 8 final, a game which will have happened by the time this recording goes live. And he talked to us about his route into coaching, his tactical identity at Mamelodi Sundowns, the CAF Champions League and its importance within South African football, and inevitably what his future looks like in coaching. But as always, you don't want to hear me talking about what the episode is about. You want to listen to it for yourself. And so without further ado, here's Rulani Mokoena, manager of Mamelodi Sundowns. Rulani Mokoena, welcome to the TIFO podcast. It's great having you on.
Thanks, John, and I really appreciate the opportunity. Great to be with you, and the incredible volume that you also have with regards to your subscribers and a lot of the technocrats that listen and listen to the podcast. I'm really, really excited for this podcast. Thanks for the opportunity.
You're very welcome. And I do need to thank you profusely for coming on this week, because I know you have a really important game coming up this weekend against Orlando Pirates in the final of the MTN 8, for which I should say to our listeners, this game will already have taken place by the time the episode drops. So, Rulani, I really appreciate your time. I'm really looking forward to talking with you today. But I want to start us off by talking a little bit about your background, how you ended up in coaching, because many of our listeners won't know much about your background. So I do want to talk about how you ended up as the coach of the Mamelodi Sundowns. So you're something of an outlier when it comes to football management, insofar as you didn't play professionally. So how do you think that fact has impacted your approach to coaching?
Yeah, I think I was blessed to come from a football background and a football family where my late grandfather played professional football and was amongst some of the greats in South African football. My father played for Orlando Pirates. Also, my uncle played and is considered one of the greats. So coming from a family with a lot of rich history, and I think I was just born into football, and the opportunity to play professionally was not presented to me. I don't know if I was not good enough or as one of the later generations within the family, there was no football genes left for me. decided to venture into coaching at a very, very young age, at 14 years old, and fell in love with the craft. And I would say that it feels like I'm just responding to a calling and doing what I was brought onto this earth to do, you know, which is to coach. And I would hope that I am a better coach than I was a footballer or would have been as a professional footballer. So, yeah, I'm fantastic that I came from that type of background, and it was a great privilege to be born into a family that had just incredible history with South African football in particular. And got to play up until I was, I think, 19 or maybe 20, and then fully focused on coaching. And I don't think I've ever looked back since then.
Hmm. You started out working in the youth systems, and when you started out your coaching career, how important was it for your development as a coach to begin working with young players in particular?
No, very important. Particularly from me, I can't talk a lot about other people, but really when you look at the space where your pathway has been generated from that type of background, you also learn a lot more about what it takes to be a good coach, pedagogy, didactics, these type of things that you study in your coaching courses. And then also it allows you to develop your methodology, you know, with the aid of really going deep into simplifying things from a very, very young age. And when you work with younger players, you also develop this this method of teaching. Which I think has helped me a lot as a coach now, where I still have that background as a youth coach, which in reality for me is still about developing players. Even though the most important at this level is winning trophies and getting results, but part two, the process for me is to make sure that you improve players. And. And that is something that I think I picked up from my experiences with working with younger players and learning how to be a bit more patient while dealing with the younger ones. And I don't think I would make much of a very good youth coach at the moment because I'm less patient. But I think I picked up quite a lot of very good habits. And I think that these are the not just on the model of play, but also on training principles and develop a curriculum that I still go back into, you know, that helps me, as I said, one, for sure, have an overview of the global scheme, which is of course the results and at this type of level to win trophies and to win matches. Mm-hmm. But I still get a huge amount of satisfaction from seeing players improve and becoming not just better footballers, but also better human beings. And I think that has a lot to do with my time spent as a youth coach and that type of investment in the hours and the work. And I'm extremely grateful because I worked with some of the best young players in this country, and to see them go where they've gone to, like a Dino Ndlovu, like a Percy Tau. These are players that I was fortunate enough to coach at a very, very young age, and they've gone on to Lyle Foster now. We had him at Pirates at a very young age. He was 17 years old, and it's great to see him now at Burnley. So these are the thing, Nyasha Mushwekwe also, and so many of these players that are based in Europe now at this moment are players that I've been privileged enough to work with. And I think that has also helped me to develop as a coach and to become a better coach.
I'm really pleased that you mentioned that phrase, developing better human beings, because it's something that you talk about a lot. I've listened to a lot of your interviews over the last couple of days, and I really like the fact that you talk about that aspect of coaching, because I think it is easy to confuse coaching with the tactical aspects in particular. But yeah, as you say, coaching and development of players is as much about making them better humans as well. So how important is that aspect in particular to your coaching, the maybe more moral aspect of it?
I think it's fundamental. I think it's one of the most important, particularly for myself. Mm-hmm. I think I not even I think I know how much I I enjoy working with good people. Part to our recruitment, particularly at Mamelodi Sundowns, is to recruit the right personalities, and not just the right footballers, but also the right personalities, you know, and then also try to develop these personalities. I say things that which are phrases that I've heard some of the best coaches, like Carlo Ancelotti, for an example, speak about how football is the most important of the least important things in life, and the most important things in life being about brotherhood and family and loyalty and honesty. These are things that we leave beyond our playing time, and for sure, I say to the players every day, I say, there's 24 hours in a day. And how many hours do you spend as Rulani Mokoena, the one that the people know as the football coach? 2-3 hours, depending on the training session, the match, et cetera, and the preparation leading to the match. And at the most, you spend 5-6 hours known as the coach or the football star. And then you are reintegrated into society for the rest of the 24 hours. And it becomes then fundamentally important as to what type of person are you as you get reintegrated into society, and what type of values do you carry across. But I think you can't separate the two. I think football is a microscopic reflection of society. And I think the person that you are in society, and the human being, and the values that you carry in society and off the pitch, I think that has a huge impact on the type of professional that you are. And for me, I think it's a major cornerstone and an important part of my coaching outlook and how I view football. And I struggle to separate the two. I think part to being a top professional is also to be a good human being, and we try to not only live those values ourselves, because when as a leader, it's not. Primarily important what you say, it's what you do and how you carry yourself, and of course then that breeds a certain level of habits, and maybe those habits go on to create a culture, and it's important that culture is a culture that is really embedded in good life values and principles, which I find to be extremely extremely important.
I've diverted you away from the early parts of your career, but your big break comes under Pitso Mosimane, who's one of the best coaches that the African continent has ever produced. And again, I've been doing a lot of research for this podcast, and his name is the one that keeps cropping up. So what did you learn during those early days working under Pitso?
Sure, quite a lot. He afforded me a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I was only the under 19 head coach at the time, and he called me up upon his appointment as the head coach of Sundowns, and I started with small tasks like opposition analysis, like planning training sessions and documenting sessions and doing match analysis. But probably one of the biggest takeouts, really, in my time spent with Coach Pitso was, and for sure, I think I'd be failing not just him, but I would be failing myself if I don't mention how appreciative I was, or I still am, of the opportunity that he gave me. And with a lot of the learnings and the outcomes that came out from my time working with him, I think the number one was how he balanced winning with real intensity and a certain style of play that I think he's always been very, very, very loyal towards. And his man management, I think his man management is second to none. His desire to win and his ability to bring people along with him in line with the vision that he sets, not just for the team, but for the football club. I think that's one of his greatest attributes, and one of the greatest lessons that I picked up from working with him.
I'm going to run through a little bit of the history of your early time in coaching. So you spent some time after working at Mamelodi Sundowns as an assistant at the Orlando Pirates, and you were an assistant coach there. You were an interim coach there as well. And then you moved on to be an interim coach at Chipper United as well, which is another South African team. But you eventually end up back at Mamelodi Sundowns as a co-coach, and then not long after, you're the full coach of Mamelodi Sundowns. So for those of our listeners who don't know South African football too well, can you give us a sense of what the ethos is at Mamelodi Sundowns? What is the club like, and what kind of club does it want to be?
Sure. I think what's important about the club is there's a rich history in relation to, and I would really put it as a model of playing not necessarily a game model, and not necessarily as particular in the sense that a particular style, but I think a model that is inspired by the Brazilians, and when you look at, for an example, our club colors are synonymous with the Brazilian national team. You know, the style of play has always been one that would be what made in, even in the past, when we had some fantastic coaches coming from many parts of the world. And this club has been coached by some of the biggest names, like Stoichkov, for an example, Angel Kapa, who went on to coach clubs like Real Madrid, for an example. You had Johan Neeskens, who was a Barcelona legend. You know, these are names that are not just known from a playing perspective, but also from a coaching perspective, that relate to a certain style of football. You know, and Barcelona in particular, or what used to be known in South Africa, which came with coaches like Trot Moloto, who's a South African legend and coached the national team, Skrima Shabalala, and these are coaches that came up with this term called piano and shoeshine, which was something that from their many visits into Europe, they picked up from coaches like Trapattoni, you know, and then they went to develop this style of play, and Mamelodi Sundowns has always been linked closely with its ability to play attractive football. But also since the takeover from the Motsepe family and Dr. Patrice Motsepe in particular, the club has grown in leaps and bounds, and it's a club now that is ranked amongst the best on the African continent. It's a club that wants to win things and dominate and be successful through a certain way of playing, and wants to be known as one of the best clubs, not just on the continent, but globally. And I think the amount of work that we put in at the football club with the technical staff and the players and the support staff from the board and the management of this football club speaks to how much growth is anticipated, you know, how much the expansion from a global perspective is worked on day to day, and that's what this club aims to do, and through the leadership of Dr. Patrice, we find ourselves trying to do the work that will allow us not just only through a certain way of playing, but for sure with the results, by winning trophies and winning important trophies, and participating even at the level of the FIFA Club World Cup, which we've done previously, is something that we want to be that type of club that is consistently competing for these CAF Champions League titles and Super League titles and participating and maybe even challenging at Club World Cups. We've seen teams like TP Mazembe, for an example. We've seen like Al Ahly finish in the top three semifinals, and for sure we believe that that is possible. But of course, it's going to take a lot of time and a lot of work and a lot of investment, not just through only the human resources, but from an hour work ethic and knowledge and for sure with a lot of support from everybody involved in the football club. So it is a club that is fairly young by football terms, but extremely ambitious and driven by the ambitions of Dr. Patrice Motsepe, who has gone on to become the president of CAF and now through the leadership of the chairman, Mr. Tlhopie Motsepe, we continue with this drive and this desire to be one of the best, not just on the African continent, but for sure globally with that type of recognition.
Yeah, and you mentioned that there's a huge amount of pressure being the coach of the Sundowns, and I've heard you speak about the pressure of being expected to win every game and the difficulties that come with that. Now, that's hard for the players, but it's maybe even especially more hard for you making your first steps as a full coach at a club. So what was that experience like, making your entrance into the full management at a club like Sundowns?
Yeah, I think, fortunately, I was an interim coach at Orlando Pirates, which is one of the bigger clubs also in South African football, and cutting my strides there and really getting into the hang of senior management in relation to being a head coach was very good for me, you know. Was incredible lessons learned there, and I think I stand today as not just a better coach, but a better person from that experience. And even my experience at Chippa, and even though it was cut slightly short due to COVID, but those type of lessons and the work that we did behind the scenes and the learnings the lessons given through football in itself, so sometimes through the training sessions, sometimes through the matches and the results and the managing of players and the technical staff. I think a lot of that happened at my time at Orlando Pirates, and that opportunity still I'm so grateful for, and it has made the transition into the sole head coach responsibility at Mamelodi Sundowns a lot easier, because there is some background experience and some failures too, you know, and the failures have given me so many incredible lessons that I've embraced, and for sure I think today it has made my time as head coach of Mamelodi Sundowns a lot easier. And the adapting to the pressure and the expectations has come through with the far less cuts, if you want to call it, you know, mainly because a lot of the breeding and the growth took place a little bit earlier, and deep growth, you know, that has allowed me to sit in a position that has got incredible pressure, but pressure that I enjoy and pressure that I think gets the best version out of me, and it's an incredible privilege, but also something that is still for me as a young coach an educational trip and something that I still feel with a lot more years and with coaching and managing to come from me, with many, many more years still to come. I think I'm going to look back at these experiences as experiences that gave me a lot of lessons and a lot of growth opportunities, which I'm extremely grateful for.
Now, anyone who listens to this podcast knows I love to talk about tactics, and that's what I want to get into with you now. So how would you describe Rulani Makwena's Mamelodi Sundowns from a tactical point of view in particular.
No, I know. I also know how you love, and I love reading and listening to some of your work. I think you've got, I think as a team, you guys have got incredible insight and the investment is just unbelievable. But how would I describe Rulani Mokoena's Mamelodi Sundowns? I think very difficult to evaluate, to assess, to watch, to I think we are, I use the term chameleons, and I would love to be proved correct by this. I listen to a lot of people that speak about our team, and a lot of them try to say, but how, why do you do this? How do you do that? And we've seen this and we've seen that, but why is it like that, you know? And I love that because we want to be a team that's very difficult to predict, very difficult to plan for. We want to be a team that prevents a lot of questions to the opposition, but also still developed through principles and basic game fundamentals, you know, and not to move too far away from the identity of the club, the history of the club. As I've spoken a little bit earlier about the Shushaina piano and our history with the links with the Brazilian national team, but that, of course, that's the one part of the game model that we've tried to develop. But for sure, that also is trying also to stay with the modern trends of football and the principles of what we believe a big team should look like, you know, and a big team in South Africa also, you know, with specificity with regards to the type of the genetic makeup of the players that we are able to not only recruit but also develop through the youth system. So that's how I would describe. It's difficult to put it because also I'm emotionally attached to the team. So, but one of the most important things is to try to develop a team that's got core values that are derived not only from the culture of the team and the history and of course the background, but also the way we envision how we feel and how we think about football. And for sure, I would think that when you watch Sundowns, there is a specific way that you feel about the game upon watching the team, and that is what brings me a lot of joy in describing the way we play and the way we want football to be felt by the people that support us, and that's what we try to do every single day, is to develop this way. That not only infuses the technical abilities, but also speaks to how we feel about and how we think and see football. So I think that's very, very important for me.
Yeah, there's a few things I'd love to dig into here. The first being that you refer to the football as being chameleon-like, so lots of flexibility, lots of changing. I'm interested in how much you think that is just the natural approach that coaches take, but also the extent to which your own ideas have changed during your time as a coach. How have your own tactical ideas developed beyond just simply responding to oppositions? Is there a through line through your thinking that is where you can say, at this point I started thinking differently about this area?
No, for sure. I think one of the most important things as a coach, as you develop, is for sure to question your beliefs, and you see it with some of the best. For an example, last season I saw Jurgen Klopp's team playing with an inverted fullback, you know, and normally you would have Trent bombarding the right wing back situation and delivering crosses and maybe even diagonal balls from fullback to fullback with maximum width. But you saw him playing as an inverted fullback for majority of the second part of the season last season. And you see it with the best coaches in the world, Thomas Tuchel. You see it with the best coaches in the world, like Pep Guardiola, who are constantly evolving. Because as I said even earlier, that's society. Society is constantly evolving. And because society is constantly evolving, the things around society or within society, fashion is constantly evolving. Technology is constantly evolving, and so is football. And so my understanding first about football and coaching is that I don't have a fixed way of doing things. I consistently question my beliefs and consistently question my outlook on and perspective on football. And part to that, of course, is a huge requirement into the hours I invest in terms of watching a lot of football, and not only just my team and watching a lot of football, and not only just the opposition and our league, but you'll find me watching teams in Lesotho, in Botswana, in the USA, in of course the English Premier League, the Serie A, the Bundesliga, the Ligue A. Traveling, of course, a lot also to Europe and spending time on learnerships and seeing how some of the best coaches in the world go about their business. I've been fortunate to spend some time with Liverpool and spend some time with Amiens in France and 10 days, maybe even 2 weeks or so, and just watching how some of the best coaches in the world. And that has allowed me to develop my ideas myself, you know, and when I look at how I thought about football and thought football should be played a couple of years ago to how I feel about football now, is completely different. I think I've moved from being a lot more pragmatic to being a little bit more flexible in how I deal with situations, particularly from a tactical perspective. And that has had to do with my own growth, for sure, personally, as I grow older. But also because of the amount of time I spend watching games and reading autobiographies of some of the best coaches in the world, and stealing a lot of ideas, you know. And for sure, I think that's probably one of the most important parts of a coach, is this constant evolution. And this constant development of ideas, development of training curriculums, training ideas, tactical ideas, schemes, and the like. So that I find is probably one of the most important from a demands perspective with regards to my own outlook on my career from a tactical perspective.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The other thing that you mentioned when you were talking about Rulani Mokoena's Mamelodi Sundowns was the fact that there's an aesthetic element there as well. You mentioned the Brazil national team. In England, we used to have a chant that went, it's just like watching Brazil. And as you say, the kits, it looks like watching the Brazilian national team. But also, if anyone gets the chance to actually watch your team play, I would heartily recommend it, because it is very, very attractive football. It's really good to watch. Lots of, I think, penetrative passing, quick moves, up, back and throughs, lots and lots of exciting attacking plays. So really good to watch. How important are aesthetics to you as a football coach? Because as you say, the most important thing is winning. But if you can win and make it look beautiful too, I suppose that's the bonus, right?
For sure, 100%. But I think I think like many of the, and we would like to consider ourselves a big club, like many of the big clubs with the pressure of results, that's fundamental. And with coaching, we all know that we only survive based on results. And there's no other way about it in professional football. Your team grows because of the confidence and confidence in the ideas and confidence in the leadership style and you as a coach, for sure, amongst your players, the results allow you to be able to grow the team and grow and develop the team in a specific way where there's a lot of confidence that runs through the football club from the board all the way to the supporters and the players. But also I have this personal attachment with football that I, as I said even earlier, my background comes from my father was a left winger. My grandfather, I'm told, was one of the most skillful offensive midfielders in the country. My uncle was an incredibly talented attacking midfielder that could play across many of the positions from the offensive line, and so for sure that has had a huge influence in how I see football. And growing up in Soweto, where a lot of the football that we were exposed to, and not only through just watching some of the teams that many of us in the township supported, there was a certain way of playing, and there was also a certain way of how we went about feeling and demonstrating our talent in the rural areas in the township through skillful flair and of course that's the type of football that my heart resonates with, and I would love to watch, and I say this to the players all the time, I would love to watch a Sundowns match knowing that not only did we win, but we played football in a way that makes me happy to know that we've made many people happy while watching it. And that's why the way we want to play and developing these ideas in this specific way matters a lot, you know, matters a lot. And I try to give the players that feeling every single day on the training pitch that I enjoy watching them play and I enjoy watching them train and I enjoy watching them express themselves through the game of football, which is a game that we all love and primarily are involved in football because we fell in love. We didn't fall in love with football through kicking the ball and chasing it. We fell in love through passing it to each other, and if we didn't pass to each other, we dribbled past each other, and then slowly developed this passion where we started playing with each other against each other, you know, and not kicking each other or defending against each other, but for sure enjoying the ball and seeing who would have more time on the ball and who would express himself technically better than. And so for me, that's how I feel football personally should be played, and I try to express this every single day to the players, and this feeling to the squad, to the coaches, and I always hope that it is a feeling that is carried through every single 90 minutes we get to watch Mamelodi Sundowns play.
Yeah, and I've seen the tapes of Mamelodi Sundowns. I've seen you on the sidelines. You're clearly enjoying the games sometimes too, so that definitely comes across. One of the things that I love hearing when you give interviews is the amount of times that you reference other coaches. You've already done it lots in this podcast episode. You've talked about the coaches who are influential on you. And I'm interested to maybe tease that out a little bit more. So who would you say have been the most influential coaches upon your own coaching style?
Well, it's very strange because there's a big contrast. And I say contrast, but I also say it with a little bit of a disclaimer, in the sense that if you really go into the two, there's a lot more similarities than there are differences. And Jose Mourinho and Pep Guardiola have been incredible influences in my coaching career. Like I would presume a lot of coaches my age or coming from my generation, because at that time, a couple of years ago, the guy that spoke to us about being a coach and being a successful coach was Jose Mourinho. At that time, with not just the incredible work that he did with Inter and Real Madrid, but Porto and then moving to Chelsea, and the type of football also that he played at that time was football where you could see a development of ideas and tactics and a huge influence of coaching. For me, that was the first time I was really, really exposed to what coaching was about, you know. And even though as I went through, there were teams that really even caught my eye. I remember being fascinated by Vicente Del Bosque's Real Madrid side, you know, and the detail that I picked up as a very, very young coach at the time. And while learning about the game, I fell in love with that Real Madrid side. And I even fell in love with Carlo Ancelotti's AC Milan team, you know. And so even while those were huge influences, I would still say Jose Mourinho was number one. But as the game developed and times went by, of course Pep Guardiola became the icon, you know. And to say that my style was influenced by Jose and Pep is actually to many will sound a little bit of a contrast, because you think of the one being positional and of course technically really strong from that perspective, and you think of the one as a very pragmatic, very, very, very one approach to, but I think they've got also quite a lot of similarities, you know, and I think Jose Mourinho's background of being an assistant to Bobby Robson and Sir Bobby Robson, and maybe to Louis van Gaal and his time at Barca also allowed him to incorporate quite a lot of the Johan Cruyff principles into his style of play, if you like, and things that you would find also in a Pep Guardiola-esque team, you know. So from one, I would say that has been fundamentally a huge aspect of my coaching career from both of them. But with Mourinho, I picked up quite a lot also reading his autobiographies, watching his press conferences, and listening to players and the way they speak about Jose Mourinho and particularly in the earlier ages, and his man management skills and his ability to transmit messages using the press, using the players, using football matches even, and how important picking those type of small details from Jose Mourinho, he then going into Pep to develop a specific way of playing, but still also looking still at coaches like Jurgen Klopp now, for sure. De Zerbe is a big influence on me. I'm a huge fan. Roger Schmidt I've followed since Leverkusen days, and I've always been a great admirer of his teams. And this is the influences, and that's why I say. I say my understanding of football is a bit chameleon-like, because even though I've got a certain way that I think football should be felt, like a chameleon will always be a cold-blooded reptile, you know, but it's a cold-blooded reptile that's able to adapt to conditions, to the environment, to demands, to safety, you know, to vulnerability. And that's how I feel also football is, you know. Even though you keep your understanding from a global perspective of how you feel the game should be played and how you understand the game from that perspective, but also there's an adaptation that I think always has to come into it, you know. And that adaptation has to be influenced by many, many factors, not just the opposition, but where the team is, the results, the pressure, the profile. Is it a game of consequence? What type of game is it? And these type of things, the schemes and the formation, the principles of the opposition, the quality of the players that you have. So there is a lot of, still a lot of that in me. But part to that is also a global understanding of still remaining a cold-blooded reptile. And that is still feeling the game the way we feel the game should be played and how we approach the games. But of course, there's still so many factors that are derived and have to go into the specifics and the principles that we adopt game by game.
You mentioned Pep Guardiola there. Now, obviously in the media, we love a bite-sized nickname, and you have been labelled Pep Light by some people. How do you feel about these sorts of allusions to Guardiola? Because I'm sure you would rather be known as, I don't know, the full fat version of Rulali Makwena.
Yeah.
To what extent do you feel as though coming, always being considered as a follower of someone else, how does that miss the fact of what you are as a coach in many respects?
It's quite an interesting question, to be honest. And I haven't been asked that question. And when I think about it, I think there's two sides to it. I would presume that even a general worker that works in a company and has a job from 9 to 5 has some form of role model, be it within the company or maybe outside the company. And I think role models, and maybe in a certain way mentors, and you can be extremely fortunate that when you can have your role model being your mentor, and not a lot of us get that privilege, you know. But I think they play an incredible role in one's growth and in one's ability to follow certain footprints. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, you know. I think some of the most successful people in the world, and you can go even into music, for an example, some of the greatest artists in the world, you hear them speak fondly about some of the musicians that they looked up to. For an example, an Usher speaks about how he's looked up to Michael Jackson and how he derived his dance moves from the infamous moonwalking, you know, that was only known by or through or something that was synonymous only to Michael Jackson. And you can go into business, you can go into politics, and a lot of successful people have had the opportunity to stand on the shoulders of giants, and that could be just figuratively or practically, you know. But I don't think there's anything wrong with looking up to someone who is extremely successful and who has done what you aim or are aspiring to achieve. But also, for sure, as a coach, you want to have your own identity. You want to, as a human being, you don't want to live anyone's life. You don't want to be a carbon copy of no one, because your life, you only get to represent yourself once. And part to that, for sure, is working very, very hard to still develop a lot of your own habits and your own perspectives and your own ways of doing things, and not to go too technical and too detailed. But all of us have what we call mirror neurons, you know, and it happens that you, the more you watch someone and the more you spend time with someone and the more you invest into someone, you, of course, you end up picking up certain mannerisms and certain ways of doing things like that person that you admire. And that's only a scientific fact. But at the end, for sure, I would love to develop my own personality, and that's what I try to do every single day. I would love to develop my own identity, because we are all uniquely born and uniquely created with specific callings and specific responsibilities while we are here on planet Earth. And I would love to live my life the best way Rulani would look back into the pages of his life story and say, yes, on the one side, I was influenced by so many great coaches, and I learned and copied quite a lot from many of the greats, and across many spheres. You know, I try to listen to podcasts from incredible neuroscientists or the best CEOs of some of the big companies and most successful companies. Some of the most talented athletes I try to follow and read autobiographies. And of course, they say success has the same clues all the time. And I try to pick up these clues as I go along. But at the end, on the other side, I would still love to have it the Rulani way, you know, the Rulani Lungisi Mukwena way. And I think I still try every single day to develop this. And it's up until the last day that I get to be on this earth, I think it will always be work in progress and a continuous form of evolution and growth that I would always motivate myself to continue with up until the very last breath.
Now, I don't think anyone's going to dispute the fact that the Mamelodi Sundowns are the best team in South Africa right now, because at the time of recording, you're top of the DStv Premiership by 10 points after only 8 games, although you have played one more game than some of your closest challengers. And as we mentioned before, you're in the MTN 8 final this weekend. Of course, you want to win every competition you're in this season, but the real test is going to come in the CAF Champions League, isn't it? So how important is that competition to you?
Yeah, it's a difficult competition, and it's important to me because it's important to the football club. And because it's important to the football club, it becomes an important competition, not only just to myself and our technical team, but also to our players. And it's a competition that we've won only once, and we would love to win it again. And that is why the club has invested so much into the profile of this team. This team is made to compete for trophies and to compete particularly in the CAF Champions League. But I get the feeling, and I said this to the players even a little bit earlier, it's a feeling of fighting or trying to compete against. And Jose Mourinho used this perfectly a few years ago, football heritage, because there are teams from North Africa that have won this competition many a times, like Al Ahly and Wydad, and these are the clubs that we, Esperance from Tunisia, and these clubs have a symbolic, maybe a relationship that is very close to this relationship that we see Real Madrid having with the European Champions League. It's a romantic relationship that you can feel that the one loves the other, and even when the one wants to walk away from the other because they see potentially someone who could give them a little bit better than what they get from their current partner, but they still stay a lot closer and a lot more loyal to the one because of what history speaks about this relationship. It's the same with Sevilla, for an example, with the Europa League, and you see this happening season after season, and you ask yourself, do the football gods really pay that much attention to who eventually wins these competitions? But the reality is if you work hard and you invest a lot of time and you put in the hours to develop eventually a team that is strong enough, flexible enough, and that can produce answers to the demands, in particular for the Champions League, because the complexities of the competition are vast. You know, the traveling hours, the climate and temperatures in Southern Africa experiences extremely different climate to West or Central or East or even North Africa. The cultures are completely different. The hours of traveling are so complex. It's not like England to Germany or Germany to France or France to it takes just a couple of hours, maybe even by the most available means of transportation, which is by road. But it would be extremely difficult to travel from Cape or from Johannesburg to Cairo, for an example, by bus. You know, we would have to leave 3 weeks before the fixture. But it's a lot easier in the Champions League for the teams in Europe to be able to use the basic mode of transportation, not just the cars or the buses, but also in terms of the road, but also through rail or maybe even through flights. You know, there's a lot more easier pathways and connectivity routes in relation to that, and the availability of the routes and the availability of the flights, you know. And these type of things, the food is completely different. The culture, the people, the way they think and feel football. So it's completely difficult. And it's a different terrain to what many can envisage and comprehend. But our experiences of being in this competition and competing in this competition have put us in a position where now we believe that we should be at the very least in the semifinals and in the finals, and putting ourselves in a position to be extremely competitive and one of the best teams on the African continent and every single season competing for that trophy.
Last season you were very unlucky to get knocked out in the semi-finals against the Moroccan team, Wydad, who you've already mentioned as one of the favourites for the tournament whenever it goes out. But you put a huge amount of preparation into this semi-final, particularly in getting ready for the away conditions. What did you learn from the experience of largely dominating both fixtures, being really well prepared, and still dropping out?
Well, I think one of the biggest takeaways, and mainly also because they say hindsight is the best science, but the reality is, well, once the curtains close, you know, and you're alone, and especially you know, as a coach, when you lose games, the feeling of loneliness takes over, and the only way to, I don't know about many other coaches, but the only way I get to wash off that feeling is. A, through the next game, coming as quickly as possible and then getting that winning feeling again. Or B, like it happened at the end of the season, I wrap myself around my laptop and I watch and I critique and you get the feeling, which was very strong within me, even up until today, was that we were very unlucky. And luck. Luck is an extremely important. Luck is an extremely important part of competitive sport. How you think about generating luck and what you think about luck, and my famous quote about what the definition of what luck is preparation meeting opportunity, and I would say that I looked at it and I said, but what more preparation could we have done? Because the opportunity was presented to us to go beyond where we normally have gone. But we were unlucky in the sense that even though I felt we had prepared and extremely prepared, in fact, maybe even over-prepared, we still were not good enough to win the championship. And still being probably the only team that was unbeaten in the competition for that season, being the only team that played and was twice we played the eventual winners Al Ahly and had beaten them once at home and drew away from home and we were unbeaten against the eventual winners. And to many, it's still till today we were probably the best team to watch during the championship and the Champions League. So when you have that type of feeling, there's also the feeling that you get into, which is a space that I'm not sure a lot of us are comfortable to get into, because it's a space where you say to yourself, it's just about acceptance. And there are certain things that only competitive sports and maybe even football, in this sense, because I can only speak through my experiences about football, but only football can teach, you know, the character development and perseverance and a clear understanding that football is unfair because even though you've prepared and football still says, still not good enough. You know, and you're overly prepared, and you've invested even maybe even more than others. But the game itself is then giving a different outcome, and an outcome that speaks about maybe lessons that can only be provided through sports. You know, which is perseverance, character development, bounce back ability. You know, we speak about all these elements, but for sure, I think if the game of football was always giving you everything that you wanted, then we wouldn't speak so much about the soft skills and some of the attributes that you get to develop by being involved in the competition.
One final question. The pathway for coaches from sub-Saharan Africa to Europe is one that's not been trod by many coaches at all. And we've already talked about Pizzo Mosamane, one of the greatest sub-Saharan African coaches we've ever seen. Even he hasn't made that journey, which goes to show how stacked against you the odds are. Yeah. But the odds being stacked against you hasn't seemed to have stopped you yet in your career. So is your ambition to one day make that journey into European football?
150%. I think, of course there's a lot of stumbling blocks and there's a lot of challenges. That's a better term, challenges along the way. Like with everything in life, it's not easy to achieve things that haven't been done before, achieved before, and to assimilate to a position where you move from the African continent into that space that is full of extremely gifted and talented coaches. And also countries that go out and consistently produce top-level coaches, be it at grassroots level or maybe even at senior level with pro football, you can just imagine how difficult it is, you know. And trying to carve a way where there is no way is like walking into a black forest, you know, and trying to maneuver and find a route that not only you're hoping that will lead to a specific destination, but you are also hoping that it leaves a trail behind for many other coaches, you know, and that they don't have to get bruised and stabbed by branches of trees and thorn bushes and all these things. But hopefully it's a trail that makes it easier for many others that come behind you to be able to maneuver. And that type of responsibility is not given to many of us. And I'm grateful that I can be given maybe the strength to even consider that it is possible. You know, even just to merely think that I can achieve that. I hope gives motivation and inspiration to many coaches that there is a lot that we can aspire towards, and not only just aspire towards, but aspire and work towards. And then hopefully by getting there, you then give even greater motivation and inspiration to say, not only can you, if you conceive it and you think it and you You work hard for it. You sacrifice for it. And you invest a lot for it. You know, I look at my life today as a life that is, you know, a boring life, you know, that lacks balance. But it's a life that I've had to take a lot of sacrifices to try to get to where I am. And hopefully that is inspiration enough to the next generation and to the next kid in a South African township in Soweto or in Alexandra or Tembisa or maybe even Kwamashu, you know, that when they look at me, they also can hope for a better future, and they can hope and be inspired for a better life. And it's a responsibility that I only pray that I get given more strength to be able to continue to carry and hopefully then, God willing, I succeed and therefore my success becomes the success of many South African and maybe even an African young kid that feels and hopes that in whatever they do and they are passionate about, they can reach, they feel that they can reach the positive outcome and let's see how far this journey can take us. It's an incredible one that I'm enjoying, and one that's exposed me to so greats and incredible people like yourself and many other coaches and technocrats that, you know, if it wasn't for football, I wouldn't be exposed to. So hopefully we can continue to work very, very hard and continue to grow and learn and become better versions of ourselves. And by doing that, we are able to inspire many African kids to dream and hope for the better.
Well, I can assure you that there are a lot of people, myself included, who are rooting for you to make that journey, Rulani. So thank you so much for coming on today. It's been a real pleasure chatting to you.
Thank you, John. And once again, I appreciate the opportunity and it's been an extreme privilege to share this platform with you. Thanks once again.